My name is Dick. You'll also hear John, KC2WGB, Paul, WS2N, and most likely also Hal, K6DPZ. Those guys try to lead this thing called the Technical Net, where amateurs come together, a meeting of the clan, in which we discuss our favorite subject, ham radio, and we try to teach each other how to make those antennas and transmitters and transmission lines work better. How does propagation work? As you guys have heard me say so often, the way mankind really makes progress is to display curiosity. And the hams who sign into the Technical Net, most of them, in my opinion, do have curiosity. They want to know how things work. They want to get to the bottom of those things, assuming there is a bottom. One of the things that I've noticed that's going on for almost a year now is that the announcement for the Technical Net says that it starts at 8 o'clock and ends at 8 o'clock. I've been saying that for almost a year. Everybody I talk to says they can't fix it. I don't quite understand that. One of these days it's going to get fixed, I'd like to believe. The TechNet begins at 8 o'clock, and now it ends at 12 midnight. Let me drop. In the very beginning, it ran for an hour, and people were complaining that it wasn't enough time, and then it became 2 hours, then three, and now it's four. And the machine gets cut off at midnight at my request, because we have to have some kind of an official ending, because some of these guys, it's good to have enthusiasm, but sometimes against the dawn much enthusiasm, they would go until the sun rises, and some of these guys have got to go back to work the next morning. The Technical Net, there's a way that you can listen to the recordings for the last 6.5 years. A very enthusiastic guy in Hawthorne, New Jersey, named Mike Perry, KC2NJI, runs a website for 6.5 years, at least, that I know about, in which essentially all the TechNets are recorded. And if you go to www.amateurradio.tangovictor, amateurradio.tangovictor, and you select the right year, the right month, the right week, the right hour, they're all in 1 hour reels, and you load it into your recording device of some kind, and therefore, even if you can't stay up that late to listen to all 4 hours of it, some people, while driving to work or sitting on the train or on their noon hour, they listen to those recordings. So to get around the problem of not being able to stay up that late, John and I are semi-retired, so we can stay up pretty late sometimes. John and I have had a few conversations during non-TechNet nights in which we decided to quit because the sun had risen. Okay. Let's see. One other thing I'll be telling you guys about later is the Perseus Meteor Shower is going to be coming up in August, and that's something to look forward to. It is the biggest meteor shower of the year. And if you go to the website, I'm trying to think now of the name. Repeater. Timeout. Yeah, there's a website by NASA. NASA Science. Science@NASA.org or something like that. But you just Google the word NASA and the meteor shower, and they give you a very nice presentation about the Perseus meteor shower. And it was the July 26, 2013 issue of NASA, the NASA News, and quite possibly your poll will be telling us about that. Alrighty, a person signs into the Technical Net by giving John, me, and the crew your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not sign in simply because you're listening. The TechNet has been around since 1982. This is TechNet number 1460 of the series. So after 30.5 years, we believe somebody is listening. That doesn't have to be proven anymore. Okay, give me your call letters and name right now. T2LIW listening.
KC2MDP, Steve, and yes.
We got you, Steve. Anyone else?
The show of BBN Rockaway. Yes, yes, yes.
Enterix Union with the after pole.
WS to S. Paul with a space report. Good evening, guys.
that was Rich. Was that Kilo Bravo 2, Victor Bravo November? Was that you, Rich? Do I have the call letters correct? And are you signing in because you've got a question there, Rich? Go ahead.
KB2, Victor Bravo November. Name is Freddy. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, so it's Freddy. Very good. Your signal's a little bit noisy, but I think we can pull you through. Anyone else to check in, give me your call letters and name right now if you've got a question or a comment. K2LIW listening.
BHY, yes.
Okay, we got you, Jim. And we only heard the BHY, but I know who that is. I recognize your voice. Kilo Delta 2. I think you may have started talking before squeezing the switch, if you know what I mean. Anyone else? Give me your call letters right now. One last call. Anyone else? Let's check into the TechNet with a question or a comment.
Alpha Charlie 2, India Sierra with a question.
Alpha Charlie 2, India Sierra. Sounds like Bill. Okay. We got more than enough to get started. Steve, you're number one on the runway. And, you're about to be cleared for takeoff. Killer Delta 2, Mike Delta Prama. There we go. KC2, MPP, K2RW. You got it, Steve.
Okay, thank you very much, Dick. Good evening. Good evening to everyone on the net tonight. I'm going to throw this one out to the net, Dick, because I'm sure this is not your expertise. I bought one of those Biofing dual-band radios. It's a UV5R, if that rings a bell with anyone. And I'm trying to download the software program for it, you know, to install frequencies and stuff, make it a little bit easier on myself. I downloaded a couple of different software versions from a couple of different sites, and I'm having a problem with the computer recognizing it. Basically, what it's not recognizing is the setup EXE, and I forget what it says. It just doesn't want to do it. So I was wondering if anyone on the net has one of these radios, if they were successfully downloaded the software, what website they went to, and is there any special procedure that maybe I'm doing wrong while I'm trying to download this software. So I'll give it back to you and the rest of the net, and hopefully someone out there can give me a hand. Thanks, Dick.
BGB would come in.
I hope you got some information on that one, John. I happen to own two of those Bofang UV5Rs. And as you read the brochure that comes with it, you'll realize that it's intended to be a commercial radio, not a ham radio. And almost everything commercial these days is going so-called narrowband. What is that now? 2.5 kc of deviation instead of 5 kc of deviation. The FCC thinks they're going to get more spectrum by doing that. I, for one, think they're going to. It's not a step forward. It's almost a step back because of the way modulation index with FM works. You go that narrow, you get a hell of a lot less audio. So are the beans going to get all those extra channels? I think they are. So the UV5R.
Repeater. Timeout.
KC2ZUM with a comment on the gentleman's on that radio.
ZUM recognizing you right after John. The thing that I do notice is that it's a little bit too narrow. On both of it's 450 band operation and a 2 meter band operation. And various people have tried to increase the width of the modulation by doing various things with the microphone and the audio amplifier of the microphone, which I think is only a partial solution. I say partial solution because every well-designed FM radio has the equivalent of a soft speech clipper. If the peaks of your speech go beyond the FM deviation that makes you walk out of the IF strip, the bandpass of the receiver that's going to receive you, then you hear some pretty weird kinds of distortion. So making the audio too loud in front of your deviation control of your FM system gives you a kind of distortion, gives you a drop out of the PL, drop out of the repeater, and things like that. So just simply increasing the audio is only a partial solution. It's far from ideal, in my opinion. I'd like to believe there's a way of reprogramming the integrated circuit. It is a integrated circuit radio, meaning that 85% or 90% of all the electronics is inside of one integrated circuit. And that one integrated circuit is used for both narrowband and wideband service. So I'd like to believe there's a way of reprogramming it. Okay, John, let's see. Do you have some experience with that radio, and what's the easiest way for people to program it? KC2WGB, K2LIW in the Tech Man.
KC2WGB. Yes, Dick. Two of my friends bought them on a package, and they acquired the USB cable for programming. It was the cable that wasn't capable. They did not get it with the instrument. They bought it from eBay or wherever, and it didn't work. Both of them had cable problems. When they got the correct cable, programming flew. No problem. I don't know if that's this gentleman's problem, but it could be. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, that's certainly something to look out for, and very good information there, John. Let's see what Alan's got to say. KC2ZUM. What's the magic answer on this one, Alan? KC2ZUM, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KC2ZUM, good evening to the group. I'm coming to you through Echolink. As you know, well, you probably don't know, our net controller, because I'm with the CBS retirees net, W2BLB, had the same problem. And pretty much John answered the question. Most people have been having problems with the cable. There's an aftermarket cable out there, and that was a major problem. Once we got the proper one, which it is a USB cable, then the software worked with the cable, and it just programmed with a fly with no problem. So that's very important that consumers should know when they're purchasing that radio. You have to get their cable for that. The aftermarket, there's a problem in there with the wiring or something like that. What was happening with W2BLB is whenever he would plug it in, it would go into transmit right away. So that's it. So back to TechNet. This is KC2. This is UM.
W2BMP.
W2BMP, if you've got information on the Bofang UV5R and programming it, start up your name, sir, and please give us that information. K2LIW, my name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick. We've spoken before. Yeah, I'm pretty familiar with the UV5R. I think the gentleman's question was he wasn't able to run the executable, and that was the first incident. So the solution to that is to right-click on the executable, run as administrator, and the program should run. And the question with the cable, it has to do with the prolific chip that's actually in the cable. And if you use the cable that's used for the Waxon handy-talkie, that's what I use, and that runs flawlessly. Again, that's an authentic prolific chip as opposed to the gray market or pirated prolific chip, and that causes most of the problems in the cable. That's the real issue in the cable.
And many of us have gotten used to Motorola commercial equipment where you do use a computer-like device in order to do all the programming. And with a nice big screen, and it asks all the right questions, and you fill in the spaces, so to speak, and the radio gets very nicely programmed. And therefore, people want to do that with the Waxon and Bofang radios. One of the things that you guys should know about is that my son, Christopher, KB2IQN, for reasons I don't understand, he did not use the cable, per se. From the front panel of the Bofang, he was able to do programming. It's a different kind of programming. The way you put in the receive frequency, the transmit frequency, at first it makes you feel like you're laying those two commands, those two frequencies, on top of each other in the same memory. And you think you're going to, when you do the second operation to put in the transmit frequency after you put in the receive frequency, you think you're going to wipe out one with the other. So it's time that somebody make a grip sheet of some kind. Although, as I said, it's a little bit illogical in the way the front panel programming works. It can be done. And my son has not only done a whole lot of programming like that, but he's even lit up the screen with my call letters when you first turn it on, and it talks to you and does all kinds of funny things. So with a little bit of skill, skill, with a little bit of practice, you don't necessarily need the cable. It can be done, but the manual does not make it clear as to how to do that. Let me drop. The manual does not make it clear as to how to do that. Therefore, it's time that somebody write up a note that we all understand, that's not in Chinglish, that's in real English, so to speak, as to how to program it for the front panel. I'm not sure whether or not my son is on Echo Link tonight, but if he is, I'm going to have him give a couple of words. So KB2IQN, if you're there, Chris. KQLIW, the TechNet.
W2BMT with a comment.
Maybe my son is not there. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, the de facto standard to learn all of these things is on www.miclaw. M as in Mike, I as in India, K as in Kilo, L as in Lima, O as in Orange, R as in Robert.com /UV5R. That site has everything. It has all the software. It has all the cheat sheets, anything else you could need for the UV5R.
Very fine, Joe. So if I understand you correctly, by way of going to that website, miklor.com/UV5R, I think you're telling me that not only does it tell you how to do the programming by way of the cable, but I think you're saying it's going to give enough information in user-friendly form by which you can do the programming from the front panel without a cable. Is that what you're saying, Joe? Back to you on that one. W2BMP, K2RIW, the TechNet.
That's correct. I'm on that site right now, and they have users frequently ask questions, drivers, error messages, keypad layout functions, support sites, FCC acceptance and certification, quick manual reference, manual programming flowchart, and programming on the fly. I've used it before. It's absolutely excellent.
That's extremely good information, Joe. Thank you. That's a well-kept secret up till now to me. Maybe a lot of other people knew about it. Right now, my experience is that the UV3R, the tiny little one, which only puts out 3 watts instead of 4 watts, which is a very minor difference, it seems to have full width modulation on both the 2-meter and 440 band. It seems to be ham radio oriented. Whereas the UV5R, I was hoping that I had picked up a very narrow one, because it was just an error in a particular production run. So a month or so later, maybe it was 2 months later, I bought a second one, hoping that the problem had been solved. Well, the second one was equally as narrow as the first one. And there are various websites telling you how to rewire things and make mechanical changes in order to try to increase the modulation index. I think these are all responding to the symptom, not the cause, if you know what I mean. The real cause, from my point of view, is the thing is just programmed for commercial narrowband, small channel with a 12.5 KC channel separation type commercial radio. So I'd like to believe that there's got to be somebody out there smart enough to get the data sheet on the integrated circuit that's in there that is 85% of the radio itself. And there's got to be a way of reprogramming that if it's not one of these things where it was burned, if you know what I mean. I bet you there's a way of doing that the right way and coming up with the right standard deviation, if you know what I mean. And with any further information on the Bofang or Roxxon, but right now it was Steve's question was on the UV5R. And with any further experience they want to give us, give me a call. Let us right now. K2LIW. Okay, there was a drop out there. I heard KD2 blank K. Please give me the rest of your call letters and your name, and go right ahead, sir. K2LIW. Okay, once again you dropped out, and I think you might be hitting the mic too hard. A number of people have run into that problem, where if you're a little bit too heavy on modulation, the machine will drop you out. At that time, we heard KD2 Charlie blank Kilo. as much as we heard. So speak a little softer and come back and give us your call letters and name, sir. Go ahead.
NY2H.
Go right ahead, Lou. NY2H, KQLIW.
Yeah, good evening. I have a UV5RC, Charlie, and the fifth menu entry is wide and narrow. So you could set that to wide or narrow.
EC2IS.
Okay, Lou. Yes, there is a wide and narrow for commercial. And when you put it in wide, you get the 2.5 kc of direct deviation. And when you put it in narrow, you get about 1.25 kc of deviation. It becomes super narrow. So although it's got what looks like wide and narrow, it really is super narrow and narrow, if you know what I mean. At least on the two that I've got, the UV5R. Yeah, I think both of mine are UV5R. I think I heard Bill, and maybe he's got some information. Was that you, Bill, AC2IS? Kind of noisy, but I'm hearing you. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Yes, Dick. I think I've mentioned it before, but I've got a document that I've put together on programming the UVD1P, the Waxon. I'm also working on a spreadsheet to assist in front panel programming.
That looks. That sounds very good, Bill. So in other words, eventually people are going to have at least two ways of finding a website that's going to tell them how to do it. The Nick Lohr website that we just found out about from Joe, and yours. Your product, is it ready to roll, or is it in process, Bill? And if it is ready to roll, can you tell us the URL by which people can go there? Alpha Charlie 2, India Sierra, K2LIW in the TechNet.
I think I've got an old document that I used to give a little lecture on programming the UVD1P, and the spreadsheet is something that's relatively new, probably not ready yet, but somewhat usable if you're somebody that just wants to push buttons on the front to program it.
Okay, so I think you're giving us a tease here. You're telling us something is coming down the pike that's going to help. I'm getting the impression it's not quite ready to roll yet. Make a guess as to when it might be ready to roll your product there, Bill. Go ahead.
Well, I could forward you what I've got via email. It's not up on the website anywhere, but if you can put it up someplace, that'd be fine.
As you know, we already do have that already set up. Bernie K2 Yankee Oscar has a website by which we pass to many people the right URLs. So if you go to bernie@huntfamily.com, I think it is, yeah, bernie@huntfamily.com, and you put that information there, then we will all be available, have it available to us. And by the way, Lou, I got a question for you. I went to the Limark website today, and my goodness, is it extensive. It goes on for lots and lots of pages. There's that many choices. It's a mind-boggler. However, I know that you did a beautiful job 2 weeks ago of setting up a chat room, and I don't know if the information about the chat room is on the Limark website. The logical place would have been in the place where the nets are listed, and if I go to that listing of nets and I go to the TechNet, I didn't see that information. And so maybe sometime in the future, the chat room information will be on the Limark website and maybe also the Bernie at huntfamily.org. Here we go, huntfamily.com. Back to you for some further information on this one, Lou. NY2H, one of our directors, K2LIW in the TechNet.
You know, it's funny you should mention that. Today we had a Hudson Division cabinet meeting in Hicksville, and Nancy, who does our website, was there, and we had the conversation. What she had done was on the first page, way down, there was a little section called, like, New Events or something to that effect, and that's where she had it. But as you did, I looked at the area that talks about the nets, and
limarc.org, L-I-M-A-R-C.org, and I looked at the very first page all the way down the bottom where it says, what's new? I was hoping that I would see it there. Maybe it was, and maybe I went too fast, and I missed it, but I didn't see the information on the chat room or on the Dropbox. But it's in process. The cavalry is coming over the hill. I can hear the trumpets. So thank you, Lou. Alrighty. I think we've got some information on the way here, Steve, and this Mick Lore and what Bill is coming up with, ACQIS, that's going to help. And I think eventually one of us who's very integrated circuit savvy is going to find a way of reprogramming, recommanding that integrated circuit that is the main heart of the radio. It is my belief that that's going to be the ultimate solution for getting the right amount of deviation on the UV5R. To my knowledge, the UV3R already has it, obvious by the one that Dave and terrible on call letters, N2APG. Dave N2APG, he's got the 3R, and it sounds beautiful. But most of the 5Rs, I think, are narrow, at least the ones that are of recent manufacture. KC2, Mike Delta Papa, K2RIW. Go ahead, Steve. Good question.
Okay, I want to thank you, Dick. I want to thank everyone else with information. Yeah, I just went to the Mick Law site, and I'm going to try downloading the software there. And I'll let you know how it goes either later on or next week, depending on how far I get. Once again, I appreciate all the information from you and everyone else on the net. Thanks again, Dick.
All right, the next guy was Freddy. Your signal was a little bit noisy, Freddy, but I think we're going to pull you through. Kilo Bravo 2, Uncle Bravo November. Or is it the Victor Bravo November? I can't read my writing here, Freddy. K2RIW, you got it, Freddy. You know who you are. Yes, sir. I don't know if you're in the receive mode yet, Freddy, but we only heard one single word from you during that whole transmission. The rest was dropped out. So maybe the propagation is not so good tonight, or maybe your antenna is not in the right direction, or you're not running full power. But we got nothing out of that, Fred. We only heard, Freddy, we only heard one word. Send it back to you again for one more try. If there's something you can do to make the signal stronger, different aiming of the antenna. And by the way, if you're running a handy talkie, bear in mind that many of us have fallen into the trap of walking around the room until you found a strong signal position for the handy talkie when receiving. However, the position in the room that's going to give you the strongest signal for transmitting, in general, is a different position. Because transmitting and receiving is a different frequency, different wavelengths. And, you know, you have 1,000 wavelengths from the repeater, and even that little 600 kc of offset in frequency is enough to move those peaks and valleys around. So it may take some experimentation, as many people have discovered. You'll have to move to a slightly different position to find out when your strongest not transmit. And then when you go back to the receive mode, move back to the receive position. You're going to get some exercise. Kilo Bravo 2, Uncle, or is it Victor Bravo November, K2LIW. Give it another try, Freddy. Hey, we heard you that time, Freddy. We heard you say, how can you program the Wuxon without using a computer? And the answer is you go to that website, Mick Miklor, MIKLOR.com/UV5R. So, MIKLOR, www.MikeIndiaKiloLimaOscarRomeo.com/UV5R. According to Joe, W2BMP, that website tells you almost everything you want to know and you were afraid to ask, and it does teach you how to program it from the front panel. We've also got another savvy guy named Bill, Alpha Charlie 2 India Sierra, who's in the process of making his own version of that instruction as to how to program from the front panel, and that's coming down the pike. It's not quite ready yet, although he is going to give us, he is going to send it to Bernie's Dropbox, and maybe it's, I'm guessing it's a work in progress.
Dick?
Yeah, go ahead, John. I thought Joe told us that the McClure.com website handles both Waxon and Bofang. Let me check with Joe on that to be sure. Whiskey 2, Baker, Mike, Popper, if you're there, Joe. K2LAW in the tech net.
Yes, Dick, that's a negative. It's only for the UV5R, not the Waxon. I think the confusion was you can use the Waxon cable, the programming cable. The problem is that there's a lot of clone cables, very cheap clone cables, available for the Baofeng UV5R, and they have counterfeit prolific chips that don't work. So a solution to avoid that problem is to use the Waxon cable, which has the authentic prolific chip, and you no longer have any programming issues. That's what I did, and that worked perfectly. I hope that's a little clearer.
KD2CXK with a comment.
Okay, Joe. I'm going to have another question for you, Joe, in a minute, but let's please pick up CXK. KD2CXK, I should know you. Please tell me your name again. K2LAW, go ahead with your comment, sir.
Hey, Dick, it's Craig. Charlie Romeo Alpha India Golf in Glendale, Queens. You can get the counterfeit prolific USB to serial cables working by locating the 1.01 driver for prolific on the internet. They're all over the internet, and download that, and then go in and uninstall the existing prolific driver and install that one, and the cable works fine. But it must be the 1.01 driver.
Good information. So for those who want to use the cable and they've got the wrong cable, sounds like you've got a solution there, Craig. However, now, Freddie's original question is, how can you program it from the front panel? So my further question to you, Joe, is that, yes, the mclore.com/UV5R site does tell you how to do programming both with the cable and from the front panel for the Bofang UV5R. To your knowledge, Joe, has somebody also set up a website that will tell you how to program from the front panel of the Waxon? Or is there enough similarity between Bofang and Waxon on front panel programming that a person with a little bit of a change could be able to do it? What's your guess on that one, Joe? W2BMP, K2LAW in the TechNet.
I don't really know anything about the Waxon, to be honest with you. I own about 20 Baofengs in every flavor that you can imagine, every model, and some models you never even heard of. And that's kind of where I hung my hat, and I don't really know anything about Waxon. I'm certainly not knowledgeable enough to give any advice. I've barely held one in my hand. Sorry, I can't help you there.
No apology required there, Joe. As I've often said, a smart man knows what he doesn't know. You tell us you just don't have the familiarity. Now, I had a question on this one. Oh, yes. Because you've owned so many of the Bofangs UV5R Lite in various flavors, have you seen what my experience is, by way of Dave and 2APG, with the 3V at the 5V, he's got full modulation bandwidth. Of all of the UV5R and variations that you've owned, and you've owned a whole lot of them now, and if they've been used in commercial service where there's narrowband channeling, my guess is you're happy. But maybe you've had a chance to test them to find out if they give the proper amount of FM deviation for ham radio use, 5 kc, 5.5 kc of deviation. Do any of them do that? Is it a recent change that the more modern ones are more narrow? Or is there a different variation in production run? If you happen to know on that one, Joe, W2BMP, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Okay, so the answer to that is the earlier versions of the Baofeng firmware gave you the right deviation. It then changed about, about a year ago, and you're right, the deviation is not standard. And to address that, Baofeng came up with a new model specifically designed for ham radio, and it's the Baofeng model B as in Baker, F as in Frank, dash F as in Frank, the number 8 plus. And it's basically the same exact unit, but it's specifically designed for ham radio use and not business use.
Wow. Brand new information. So the Baofeng Not the UV5R, but the Baker Foxtrot Dash Foxtrot 8 Plus. Baker Foxtrot Dash Foxtrot 8 Plus is ham radio full deviation. Is that also being sold by the same sites like Amazon at similar prices? And even if it was an extra $10 for the unit, I mean, you start off at around $30-some-odd. If it was an extra $10, and now you had full FM modulation bandwidth, and it sounds good, and you don't have to dig into the radio and make all these modifications, I wouldn't bat an eyelash about spending the extra $10. I write a check and the problem goes away. So how long has the Baker Foxtrot-Foxtrot 8 Plus been around? How expensive? Can I buy it at the same places? W2BMP, K2LIW. Go ahead, Joe.
That model is readily available from eBay. 409 shop, which is a usual eBay store, Banker Plus. You can just go on eBay and just look for the Baofeng BF-F8 Plus, and the price is exactly the same. So, it's about $46 or so, I believe.
It does sound like it's a few extra dollars. I think some of the places selling the Baofeng were $30-some-odd, but maybe that was before tax and shipping. I'm not sure. So $46 already. eBay, 409 shop, and other places. To your knowledge, Joe, the BF-F8 Plus, roughly how long has that been available? Because I'm hearing it for the first time. Is that a brand new issue, or has that been around a while, but somehow it's just a well-kept secret? Back to you, Joe.
It's been around, I guess, about 2 months or so, and the cool feature of it is the LED display is reversed, so it's a black LED and the letters are white. I mean, that's its big claim to fame. And I think it's been available for about, I've had mine for about 2 months, and I do notice a much clearer, nicer signal on it than I do on the UV5Rs, of which I'm looking at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. My wife has one, so yeah, 6 of these, and I'm looking. That's what I'm looking at on my desk.
Wow. Once again, how many of them are UV5 and how many of them BF-F8 Plus? Joe, go ahead.
Well, I'm a computer engineer, so I've been trying to experiment with the firmware. Of them, I have 1, 2, 3 are UV5Rs, I have 1 BF-F8, and then I have a handful of the 3Rs, which you spoke about, which I absolutely love, and then I have 2 of the 3R Plus, which looks like a small UV5. And again, I've been trying to figure out a way of updating the firmware to make them a little bit more, little easier to use and that kind of stuff. So I'm trying to write my own firmware for it.
NY2HF, put a comment.
Lou recognized, and before I go to you, Lou, one last question, Joe. You've given us a lot of information tonight. Is it just because they're so inexpensive and you're curious and you're doing a lot of reprogramming? Or do you have that many people in your house that need that many radios? What's the main reason you've got so many of them, Joe? You are really an enthusiast. Go ahead, Joe.
That's because when I first became a ham a couple of years ago, I decided to go with the top of the line. I bought a Yaesu VX8 with the GPS and every other function, and I still am yet to try to figure it all out. So I needed something a little simpler, a little easier to use. And if I broke it, I always, being an engineer, Dick, I think you can appreciate that. You have to take things apart. And I wasn't about to take apart my Yaesu, but the Baofengs for $40, no problem. I have them all over my lab, so that was the main reason.
Very fine, Joe. I'm going to have some fun with you. Be careful with that Yaesu. You don't want to take that apart. There's a scorpion inside with a year's supply of food, and if the scorpion gets out, then they know you violated the warranty. That's a joke, of course. Lou, NY2H, go right ahead. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Dick, that's Yankee 2, November Yankee 2, Hotel Foxtrot. Dennis.
Sorry about that. Dennis, go right ahead.
A good place to go for the Baofeng radios is radioodyssey.com. They got some good prices, and they got a pretty good selection of what they have to offer. I think it's probably one of the best prices around. So anybody interested in something like that should check out radioodyssey.com.
Tom, good information, Dennis. And I'm guessing you're coming in by EchoLink, or you're coming in by radio from the North Fork tonight. Back to you, Dennis.
No, not EchoLink. I gave up on that. I'm coming in with my radio. I had a situation where my radio jumped the PO on this repeater, but didn't skip it on any of the other ones, so I thought it was a different problem. Took a while to figure it out.
Hey, you're sounding good tonight, Dennis. So you must be getting some good propagation. And maybe for all we know, the meteor shower is contributing to that, but that's just a guess on my part. Okay. I think it's about as much as we know at this time, Freddie. KB2 VBN for any final comments. KQLIW and the Tech Man.
Thank you for that information. I'm on the website right now. I was checking out the program.
Okay, he's checking out the programming as we speak. He's going to let us know how that turns out. Good luck with that, Freddie. The next person with a question is Jim. And Jim, how are your projects going? And have you had a chance to hang that antenna that you plug into your handy talkie? Hang at a higher altitude, and you unplug the rubber duck and plug the antenna into it, and it'll give you a stronger signal. When have you had a chance to do that yet, Jim? KD2BHY, K2I, and W on the TechNet. You got it, Jim.
Yeah, I have had a chance to do that, and you're listening to it right now, so I hope I'm coming in well. But tonight I had a question about my antenna. I have a G5RV Junior, and it's not working too well. I tune it. Well, I get 1-to-1, I tune the radio, but every time I go on, I just hear, you know, one or two signals, and they're around S5, S6, so, I was thinking about getting rid of the tuner, and, because I emailed, Gordon West, for any tips, and, he emailed back very quickly, and, he said that I might be able to put a 4-to-1 Balun in, and get rid of the tuner. Is that something that I could do?
First of all, boy, you sound good on that new antenna. You were dead full quieting. Nice strong signal. That antenna's really cranking. And when it comes back to you, you're going to tell me exactly what the antenna is. My prediction is that a person can take an extremely simple antenna made out of coat hanger wire, so to speak, but hang it at a high altitude with a piece of RG58 cable, even if it's got to, you know, snake down the hall from the second floor of the house down to the first floor where you're operating from, there are times when that extra altitude can really make signals sound a hell of a lot louder. Now, when it comes to your G5RV, I'm not quite sure why you want to eliminate the tuner. Lots and lots of people will give you an incorrect piece of information. Let me jump. I'll bet you 30% of the guys on 20 meters believe that an antenna tuner takes all the reflected power from the antenna and throws it away. Absolutely not. But I'll bet you 30% of the guys believe it. An antenna tuner, if it's working correctly, wastes no power. It does all the tuning that you want, gives you a good impedance match, the transmitter is happy, and if your transmitter can put out 100 watts, you will be delivering 100 watts to the antenna. Now, if the antenna doesn't have, by one way or another, a balancing-like device, and I think the G5RV, by way of its mechanical setup, does have a kind of a balun, but if you didn't have a kind of a balun, your transmission line becomes hot with RF, which is not necessarily bad. If it doesn't create television interference, it can be very tolerable. But if you want to experiment with a 4-to-1 balun, go right ahead and do that. However, let me drop. My goodness, that was the biggest sneeze I've ever had. Took a while to happen also. If your antenna is being fed
and with 50 ohm cable, and if the G5RV Junior is set up to accommodate the 50 ohm cable up to the beginning of that antenna, then to switch over to a 4-to-1 balun, which means you're now impedance matching to 200 ohms, so to speak, might not be an improvement unless you're making other modifications to the G5RV. So give us a couple of words on that. And when you said that you're only hearing signals of S5 or S6, and I'm getting the impression you're not getting as many responses as you'd like, I am curious as to what band you were doing it on. Was this 40 meters? Was it 20 meters? And were you fairly sure that the band was open during that time of day that you were on that particular band? So what band was it there, Jim? KD2PHY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
It's mostly on 20 meters, and 20 meters opens up during the daytime usually, and yeah, I'm on like 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and it should be open, and yeah, I checked the reports on QRZ, and it says that it's they're good conditions, and I only hear like, you know, one or two signals.
Now that is mysterious, Jim, and I think you've told us in the past that the center of the dipole is like a quarter of an inch or a half an inch away from your the gutter or the downspout tubing for the rain gutter of the house, and I think the antenna itself is not being suspended by a tree. It's very close to the roof of the house. I get the impression that that could be an aggravating factor. Tell us a little bit about mechanically how your G5RV Junior is set up. What is the nearest metallic object to it in its arrangement, and how high above the ground is it? Over to you, Jim, K2LIW.
It's kind of a confusing setup. It's in my side yard, and it's my window is on the second floor of the house. So what I did was I tied a piece of twine to the top of the antenna, the centerpiece of the antenna, and I closed the window down on the twine, so the antenna was hanging almost from my window. And then I set the arms of the elements of the antenna so that it was an inverted V, and it was sloping down, and I tied it to the ends of my fence.
Even though you may think that what you're describing to us is, you know, not the proper layout, there are times when what you described can work like a charm. And by the way, a G5RV Junior, the fact that you've got it sloping down as an inverted V, that in itself shouldn't stop it from working, shouldn't be any serious detriment. As you take a dipole-like antenna, which by the diagrams you see in the book, it's a flat-out, straight, parallel to the ground, and you would easily get the impression that, gee, if I slope it down in a 45-degree angle on each side, that's going to be a brand-new antenna. Mm-hmm. That dipole, in most cases, is extremely forgiving. You can slope those ends down a whole lot, as long as the center part, where the highest current is, where the feed line goes, as long as that's at a reasonable altitude in the air, it usually behaves well. But we've now been hearing from you for some time that you're hearing very few signals, and that is a bit confusing. And I do remember, let me drop, that Bowery N2MB, and also, as I remember, Hal, K16PZ, was suggesting that you go to the back of the radio while you're receiving and add the antenna and disconnect the antenna. And if you're getting full sensitivity out of the radio, when you connect the antenna on the radio, you should hear a significant noise increase. And that would tell you you're really hearing the noise of the ionosphere that's on 20 meters. If you connect and disconnect the antenna, and the noise coming out of the radio, and the S-meter doesn't move, and the noise coming out of the radio sounds the same, then it does suggest that there's something wrong with the sensitivity of the radio, or maybe there's extra loss in the cable. Too bad one of the guys who are pretty smart hasn't visited you yet to find out why you're hearing so little. Some of the preliminary tests you can do, Jim, are an ohmmeter test. Although it sounds kind of silly, you're absolutely positive that, let me drop, that the shield of the coax is properly connected in the connector that goes to the back of the antenna. That cable goes to the antenna tuner. The output of the antenna tuner, that connector is making good connection to the cable and the center conductor by way of an ohm meter, using an ohm meter correctly on both ends of all the cables. It's a very simple test, a pretty good go-no-go, in which at least you want to confirm that there isn't a dead short somewhere or an open circuit somewhere. The fact that your antenna tuner is able to give you a good standing wave ratio is a very good sign. But there's a catch. Let me drop. Occasionally, an antenna tuner with just the right length of transmission line will be able to tune almost a dead short. In other words, there could be a dead short at the antenna, and because there's a little bit of loss in the cable, if the antenna tuner has enough range, it could give you a good VISWR, even though you're not really radiating, you're just heating up the cable, so to speak. I doubt it, but know that that's a possibility. I guess one way to confirm that one, Jim, would be to temporarily bypass the antenna tuner. When you go with the transmitter straight into the antenna, you measure the standing wave ratio that way, or in some cases, some antenna tuners will have a way of setting the controls on the front panel so that you can measure standing wave ratio on the antenna side, not on the transmitter side. Normally, you adjust the antenna tuner until on the transmitter side it sees a good match. But it's also nice to know if the VISWR of the antenna is high, how high. If the VISWR of the antenna is, let me pick a number, 3-1, and your antenna tuner is bringing it down to 1-1, that's beautiful. If on the antenna side your VISWR is 20-1, that's now well beyond the threshold of alarm, suggesting that there's a dead short or an open circuit or the absolute wrong length of cable of radiator on the antenna, so it's not tuning to the right band. So any method by which you could either do a bypass test of the antenna tuner or find out what is the real standing wave ratio of your antenna could be helpful, Jim. KD2BHY, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I've done the test where you unplug the antenna from the back of the radio and listen for noise, and it's working fine. I'm getting the noise, and I also tested the sensitivity because there's a setting on the radio where you make a 25 a tone that is 25 kilohertz apart from each other, and they were all S9, so that means the sensitivity on the radio is good. I don't think there's a short in the antenna because when I take the coax from the back of the radio, there's very little noise, and then when I put the coax back into the radio, there's substantial noise.
Yeah, that does suggest that you're really hearing the noise of the horizon, and you're really hearing ionospheric noise, which suggests you're getting essentially the right amount of sensitivity of the system. But the fact that you only hear one or two signals is sure mysterious. I guess there's a slim chance we're running into a Nevis problem, near vertical incident sky wave, which is what you get if the antenna is a very small number of wavelengths off the ground. Don't tell me how far down to the ground are the ends of the antenna. I know they're going to the fence. But the center of the antenna, which is on the second floor of your house, and that particular piece of string is held down by the window, I'm going to guess that that is around 20 or 25 feet above the ground. Is that true, Jim? Go ahead.
That sounds about right.
Okay. 20 meters, by definition. The wavelength is 60 feet. You're around 20, 25 feet off the ground. You're less than half wavelength above the ground. That does make the antenna pretty close to Nevis. In other words, if you did a computer plot, if you did a computer simulation of your antenna in your environment, where it is that low to the ground, and you plotted antenna elevation pattern, I think you'd find that a lot of the signal is going straight up in the air and not very much of it is going to the horizon. from what I'm hearing, Jim, I think you're going to get your greatest improvement by any means that you get more altitude. Just like the antenna on 2 meters now that you're using, which has more altitude, boy, it made you a hell of a lot louder. And if by some means you can get a little more altitude out of your G5RV Junior, I know it's going to help. I'd like to believe that somewhere on the property there's a tree that by way of a slingshot or whatever, you can throw a line up into the tree. And I'm not recommending you do the climbing because that can be dangerous. Let me drop. John, recognize me there in a minute. So I'd like to believe that there's a tree somewhere on the property that's higher. And maybe you can make a deal with the neighbor that's got a high tree. But anything you do for extra altitude is going to make things better. So my first guess is that's one of the aggravating factors. Let's see what John's got to say. KC2WGB, K2LAW, go ahead, John.
KD2AVO, comment.
AV, you recognize but John first. Go ahead, John.
Dick, the only thing we don't know about the construct is how did he secure the ends of the inverted V to the fence? That might, you know, that could be a problem. Let's see how he did that.
I doubt it. I'll bet you he's got an egg insulator or string. If the end of the antenna going to the fence is got an egg insulator or a piece of insulating string, and if the insulating string is, let me pick a number, oh, at least a foot long before it touches the fence.
Think how V is the V. How far apart are the ends of the element?
We're going to find that out also. We're going to go back to Jim right now. He's going to tell us how long is the cord going to the fence. In other words, the tip of the antenna, is there an egg insulator there? Question number one. And if there is, that sort of ends the problem. Although, yeah, the end of the antenna, by one means or another, how close to the fence is the end of the antenna? KD2BHY, K2LAW, go ahead, Jim.
There's the antenna element, and then there's an egg insulator, and then tied to the end of the egg insulator, the other end of the egg insulator is twine, and then I wrapped the twine around the fence and tied it off.
Okay, the end of the antenna, make a guess. The end of the antenna where the egg insulator is, how close to the fence is that, Jim? Go ahead.
Maybe a foot.
Yeah, that is kind of close. With only 1 foot of spacing on 20 meters, that could be doing some detuning. Although that shouldn't knock down the signal more than a dB or so, but still, that's, again, a little bit aggravating. It's kind of close to the fence. But after I pick up AVU, which I think is, I can't pronounce that name, sir. I know you live in Mineola. You'll have to tell me how to pronounce your name. KD2AVU, K2RV, go ahead with your suggestion, sir.
RW, this is KD2AVU returning. I can just call me Tim, and or call me Tian Yi. That's my Chinese name. But I would suggest if you don't have a lot of height to put up a G5RV or a dipole, go vertical is a better choice because the lower radiating takeoff angle for DXing. So, yeah, that's just my comment, over.
I think that's a good suggestion, Tim. So, Jim is going to build more than one antenna. No matter how many antennas we set up, Jim, there's always room for one more. And if you've got a horizontal and a vertical and you flip back and forth between the two, depending on the conditions of a particular day, one's going to